Hi, my name is Julie Hyatt, and I have been on staff at Seacoast for just a little over 22 years. And in 2020, March, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, a small lump, following a routine mammogram. And obviously, yes, I highly recommend those routine mammograms. After 3 months of chemotherapy and a lumpectomy, 7 weeks of radiation, I am blessed to be able to say I am cancer-free and getting regular checkups. It was indeed one of the hardest things I've ever had to go through, but I must say it took me to such a beautiful and intimate time with the Lord. It really was an amazing spiritual journey.
You're about to hear Rylan Hope Mayer and Sadie Joy Mayer, daughters of Jenny and Ben, whose story we share on this episode. It's a poem called One Soldier by Sherry Tharp. We dedicate this episode to all of those strong, courageous women who survived breast cancer. We also remember and honor those ladies and their families whose earthly lives were taken by this disease.
One soldier. One lonely soldier marching on, afraid of what's in store. She was in a battle for her life, scared of facing more. Her spirits soon were lifted at the sight of something new. A fellow soldier joined her. They were an army of two. Once again it happened, someone joined them in the fight. That first lonely soldier began to see some light.
Everywhere she looked now, there came a friendly face. More soldiers to join the battle to see her through the race. They came in every color, both the young and the old. They stood together side by side, their spirits growing bold. They would fight together faithfully, for the soldier was their friend, supporting her through the battle with a love that has no end. By Sherry Tharp.
Today marks the 5th year of my aggressive breast cancer diagnosis. They tell me I'm now cancer-free. That feels kind of strange to me. When I had cancer, I lived loud. I didn't cover my head. I didn't pretend I was okay. People saw me. They knew what was happening. Now, when someone is diagnosed with breast cancer, they come to me to help with their journey. I am happy. I am glad that God uses me in such a way.
This is Jess Rieger, and I've been a part of Seacoast for the last 10 years. In 2018, I was diagnosed with stage 3 invasive ductal carcinoma. After 28 rounds of radiation, 16 weeks of chemo, and a double mastectomy, I'm currently on my way into remission. I'm so thankful to the village and prayer warriors that walked with me through my treatment. I couldn't have done it without my small group and my church family. Women, I urge you to take action and get your mammogram.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Stinson. We've been attending Seacoast Church, Johns Island campus, for about 2 years now. In 2009, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, but we got it at a really early stage. So I was aggressive in my treatment. I had a double mastectomy with a tram flap. And after 4 surgeries, I am very happy and thankful to say that I've been cancer-free for 13 years. And all of this was happening while I was going through a divorce and facing my new life as a single mom. What God has taught me the most throughout all of this, He never, ever, ever left my side, not one time. I get a little emotional. It really was this place in my life that catapulted my relationship with my living Lord Jesus. And so my advice to all the ladies out there is, first of all, definitely get checked, stay regular on your mammos. More importantly than that is, if you don't know Jesus as your Lord and Savior, now is the time to make that appointment. I'm excited what God has to do in the next years of my journey and my life. Thanks so much. God bless.
This is Sherelle Smith. In 2016, I was diagnosed with stage 2B invasive ductal carcinoma, which is also known as breast cancer. After my diagnosis, my treatment plan actually included 20 weeks of chemotherapy and 28 radiation treatment. And in between the two, I had a right mastectomy. Going through breast cancer and the treatment was truly a journey, and something that I would certainly say was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. Extremely thankful to God and to my family. There's no way I would have made it without faith in God and definitely the support of my family. So, of course, I want to say to all the women out there, please, 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 if you don't do it for yourself, do it for me. Do your monthly breast exams. It literally can be the difference between life and death.
Just because I don't believe or agree doesn't mean I can't learn from you.
Why did you have to bring that up?
Okay, that one I'm super embarrassed about.
Do you like me?
Do I like you?
Yeah.
As an individual or as a podcast?
Just as a person.
Well,
version.
I like it.
Okay, cool, yeah. Cool.
And I don't have any interest in appearing to be stronger than I am.
I ain't bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. He gonna leave. You feel me?
How do we love people who see the world differently than we do?
What would it look like if we truly loved all of our neighbors? Could listening to their stories be the first step? This is Seacoast Church, and there's way more to talk about.
So it's weird. It's like I'm a particular way, and then I meet people that are complete opposite. So when I hear of a diagnosis of someone that I really love, I typically, and maybe it's because of my life experience, I typically don't get really serious about it. It's like, well, it's still not for sure. And I kind of just put out worst case scenario, but then I know people, and I'm kind of a natural worrier, so I don't know why I don't do it in those situations, but then I know people that go straight to the worst. And I'm just curious, all three of you, when was the diagnosis? What was the diagnosis? And like, as a mother, as a husband, and then as the actual person, like, how'd y'all take that in?
I had found a lump on my breast. It was like 11 or 12 at night. I had just come home from hanging out with some girlfriends, celebrating a birthday. And I tend to jump to worst case scenario. Like, I'm like, oh no, it's bad. But I do feel like I jumped to worst case. And so I had Ben feel it. And then the next morning I had Lisa feel it. And I'm thinking like, I got to get to the doctor like right now. And that was like, I felt urgent about it.
And I know this is a random question. Do you do random checks?
So I had a friend go through breast cancer. Literally, she was growing her hair back when I started my journey. And so I had checked about a month prior, not regular checks, but I'll go to my doctor every, you know, when I'm supposed to. But I had not felt anything. And so when I felt this, I felt concern. And so when we went to the OBGYN that morning, she was very unconcerned. I don't think it's anything. I think we're good. But in my gut, and I just had a check, I just thought, something doesn't feel right. And so I asked if I could get a mammogram literally the same day. And so she called around. I got a mammogram the same day. So that was kind of, I mean, I just had a feeling something was not right from the get-go. And so we didn't get a diagnosis that day, but we got a very concerned from the mammogram and the ultrasound that we did following that check. There was a lot of concern. And so that's kind of when we knew something was not right.
Right. So you felt like your intuition was spot on.
Which is crazy, because I do sometimes feel like, am I being crazy to think this? But I think we all probably, like, I don't know, you have some weird thing or, you know, a bump on your scalp or your knee, and you're like, where did that come from? You know, yeah. You always think that and think, well, I'm overreacting.
Right.
But I just didn't think this was an overreaction.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I use the word intuition, but now looking back, would you say the Holy Spirit was kind of prepping you a little bit? Now this is for real. You need to prepare.
Maybe. I mean, it was such a random thing. I wasn't doing a self-check when I found it. I was scratching the side of my breast. And so it wasn't even like I was searching for anything. I mean, certainly could have been. So.
Yeah. And Ben, were you right in the middle of opening Rusty Bowl or right into it? I mean,
a little business in a big world. And we had all of our issues of trying to figure out how to make money and create a business that was, you know, successful. And I
just
think
some free promo for our locals. You just opened up on what is it, meeting?
We did. Yep. King Street.
Congrats.
Yep. Yeah. It's been
a big
awesome.
Deal. Rusty Bowl, everybody. Go get a beer.
Past Calhoun. So it's awesome. Yeah. We're an old historic district, Charleston. So that's pretty cool. We had done a lot of nonprofit work and definitely interesting and, you know, financially insane. So,
right.
Yeah.
So she is the initial news for her. She feels like, this could be major.
Yeah.
How are you taking it in?
She basically the next morning was like, hey, I feel this thing. Can you see what this is? And I felt it and I thought, well, we probably should get this checked out. I'm usually the one that's relaxed. Everything's fine. You know, the world's on fire. Who cares? And she's more of the world could be on fire. So with that being said, you know, we both took it serious.
Yep.
And when we went in there, the first thing I saw on the doctor's desk was the statistic on how many marriages end up in divorce.
Really?
And so that was really interesting.
Because of breast cancer.
From breast cancer.
Didn't know that. And so y'all didn't know that either?
Had no idea. And of course, every time I went in there, that was the first thing you see because it's really sitting right there out front. So, but yeah, I guess it's
intentional, but it's kind of mean.
It was somewhere around 20% of marriages go through.
Right.
Honestly,
you had breast cancer, and we want you to know your marriage is in trouble.
How on earth is this thing coming to an end? Why? Who would ever leave their wife, wife is leaving their husband off of this? You know, I just could not understand. You know, what does this mean? So, and maybe there's more to this than we know.
I really feel like it was kind of a precursor to really understanding the depth of difficulty that this will have on your body, on your marriage, on your family. And, you know, we had no idea. My grandmother, both of my grandparents, grandmothers had breast cancer. My dad's mom did die pretty young of breast cancer. It was what, mom?
She was 56 when she died.
And she was diagnosed at like right around 49 or 50.
Yeah. She lived about 6 years after her diagnosis.
So, and this was back before they had all the research, but she really suffered quickly and passed away. And then my mom's mom, she also had breast cancer. Is that what took her? Or
no, she her diagnosis was later in life, and it was not anything they were super concerned about. She was like in her 70s. We gave her like a pill to take for 5 years, and it was not a big deal for some reason.
Yeah. Right.
And in fact, when we mentioned it to the breast cancer doctor, she was like, "Oh yeah, that doesn't count." Yeah. So we're like, okay, well, whatever. We don't know what that means. But.
So it was scary, but we didn't really, I don't think we knew what we were getting ready to walk through. We knew what we had walked through with my dad's mom, and that was very upsetting and very scary. And I think that kind of set all the alarm bells off.
So it's wild. It's 16 years into parenting, so I'm kind of used to it, but I know y'all will know exactly what I mean. When I ask Miss Debbie what her thoughts were before you had kids, it's kind of a meaningless question as far as we just didn't understand. Whereas now having our kids, it's like a real big question. You just found out that your daughter has cancer and it doesn't sound good. How do you take that moment in?
She's good at hiding things from me because she knows it upsets me. But I did happen to call her when she was on her way to the mammogram, and she told me. And so I tried to find Greg, and he was in some meeting. So I sat in the church auditorium and waited for him to get done. And then I told him and just burst into tears. It was just scary because of what we'd been through with Greg's mom. Yeah, you don't want to see your kids go through anything like that. You know, she's our youngest. And it was like, what in the world? Why would this be happening?
When I was writing questions down and everything, I'm thinking, if I were in your shoes, I'd be like, God, we already had a jet ski accident and a car wreck. Can I just be done with it? Like, I would seriously be like, come on, I've had my share.
Yeah, that's true.
Real mature thinking over here, Miss Debbie.
We all went. It was kind of our whole family showed up at the doctor, the breast cancer doctor's office for her biopsies. And they finally called us back, and she was crying. And I think that was maybe where the confirmation that it was cancer happened. So that was a tough time to see. And she had said they wanted to do one more biopsy. And she said, no, I can't do another one. And so I could just see her stress and anxiety and pain and fear, you know, and that was hard to see.
Yeah,
it really was.
One breast cancer diagnosis is not like the others, correct? Like, you could get a breast cancer diagnosis and the word cancer is alarming, but big picture, it's not that big of a deal. I don't know.
Right. Like, I didn't understand that either. After my mammogram, they did an ultrasound, and while she was measuring what she saw, she said there were three. And I thought, three what? Like, what do you mean there's three? And so while they were doing the mammogram, I just, some of the language that the tech used was just concerning to me. We immediately found out there were three tumors that had broken out in that breast. And so when we were at the biopsy, and they were kind of searching and doing all of the ultrasound stuff, they kept feeling like they could see more. There were three tumors that had broken through the cell. And then there were also multiple cells that were also cancerous. And so they just hadn't broken through. So it was scary. We knew what kind of stage we were in for a while. But I remember the doctor saying, even if this is stage 4, we're going to get through this. And it scared the bejesus out of me.
There you go. Bejesus, I think, is acceptable in the podcast. Is that all right, Mustafa? Bejesus? All right.
I think our doctor did a fantastic job of not filling us with fear and worry because, yeah, the truth is Jenny is a lot like her mom and not necessarily taking things too serious, but really they understand the full impact of things that can happen and
right.
and trying to prevent those things from happening and doing whatever they can to be there for it. So,
but do you have any idea what's in store?
There was a lot of fear. I mean, I think it was a point for us where we thought, is this it? You know, is this what God has for Jen? Is this, you know, for the family? What about our kids? What about, you know, everything in life, you know, that we feel like, you know, you have a future for, and all of a sudden it's being sort of ripped away. And
after the biopsy and the doctor came out, she sat us down and talked to the family and kind of told us what to expect for the next year. You're going to go through it. It'll be about a year. And then, you know, you'll be able to kind of move on from it, in a way. And so we had that preparation a little bit, but there was nothing like that. So my journey ended up having a lot of twists and turns that were difficult and not as bad as others. But, you know, we didn't really know how long this was going to take.
At the onset of everything, how significant were thoughts of death? Were you thinking a lot? Man, I might lose my wife.
I was thinking in my mind, how do I race three? Because of my own anniversary. And, and you know, right. We have a great family. We all live in the same neighborhood. So that's really cool. But, you know, what does this mean? You know, and why are so many, you know, husbands leaving their wives during this process, not even just after, but during the process.
So that is statistically why so many divorces, because the husbands bail?
Husbands bail. I don't know if it comes down to a sexual thing or if it's just there. I will say that the identity of your family gets completely changed onto one person going through something that they really do need help going through. You can't really do anything for them in the process, but other than be there for them, but all the focus is on them. And right. I think that
it's not really a season of give and take.
Not a give and take. Even your relationship has a hard time growing because you're just stuck in this mode of survive. Yeah.
It was that hard for you to be in a season of all you could do is take and that you didn't have anything you could give?
Yeah, it was very hard. I think we're still dealing with the aftermath of that, even on our kids. Third grade is a pivotal moment for the girls. And
how old were they during this time?
Yeah. So the girls were in third grade. So they'd have been 8 or 9. Breck was 5 or 6. It was hard. It was hard because number one, everybody knows who I am, you know, in the church. And so when you go to church, the focus is always on me. And it's always on, are you okay? How are you doing? And the children were, the girls especially, were desperate for someone to ask how they were doing and making sure they were okay. And they're just, as much as Kids Coast was there and all of that, they just didn't have somebody that was checking on them daily. We didn't see that either. We didn't think to look for that because I didn't think to look for that. Because
to like ask deeper questions, right. Like how are you doing with this sort of thing?
I was asking them, but I wasn't thinking they needed that from other people. It was a lot of seeing some behaviors and some things that started changing after that, that we were like, this is also very hard on everybody.
There was one time where we were doing dishes. I was doing dishes with one of my daughters and she said, Daddy, I just don't understand. I'm not jealous of mommy, but I sometimes feel, I just always feel invisible. And I broke down in tears trying to, how do you do dishes after that? And say the darndest things. They know how to speak truth even when they don't mean to. And so that's exactly what happened. And I think that's what happens, I think, in a lot of marriages with it too, is it's not that I'm jealous of my wife. I'm not jealous of the attention she's getting, but she wasn't jealous of mommy. She just felt invisible. That was a couple years worth of everybody you see always saying, how's your mom? How's your mom?
Yeah.
How's your mom?
Yeah. And you're so young, you haven't developed the skills to really recognize, hey, that's the best question right now. Yeah. You're so young.
Or to be able to say, hey, my mom's doing okay. You know, I could use some help.
Right.
So I used to take for granted children's ministry and think, okay, children's is just a great opportunity to teach them some Bible stories and that's kind of it. But when you actually step back and look at children's ministry, it really is an opportunity, I think, for that one-on-one communication to be able to break down some of the things that every single one of these kids go through.
Right. From someone who's not in it.
Correct.
With them.
And that's just it. I mean, our kids love us, but they don't need arms around them. They need somebody else's arm around them every now and then.
That's
and
huge so, to even think about,
it's
for sure.
Definitely, we dealt with it even today. So it's part of the thing we're still working through. Yeah.
That'd be an intense but effective dishwasher commercial. Like, basically, we're not washing the dishes.
Right. Man, we could sell that one. What are we doing?
Maybe a little too intense for Ken Moore, you know, but
maybe I have a rusty bowl next to me.
She was not in this alone. I mean, she was, but we wouldn't let her go through it without all of us. Sure. And she may have had times when she didn't really want us. She was done and didn't need any more attention, but she got it whether she wanted it or not. And we did have thoughts like the kids and Ben, you know, you'll just stop in your track and go, oh my gosh, think about what they're going through, when we were so focused on, you know, just Jenny. So,
yeah. And I know y'all probably, whoever's received counseling from Chip Judd, you've probably heard this, and I would imagine it'd be so hard in your shoes, but the concept of caring deeply, but not carrying, the sort of carrying that gets us in trouble, we actually can't do. Like, we can do things in the day-to-day life to help carry the load, but you can't carry her baggage and the burden, how many ups and downs, how many good news seasons was squelched by bad news or vice versa. Like, give us the narrative.
I mean, what we were told was that I would, you know, we would most likely have chemo and then a double mastectomy or a surgery of some sort. And we would see about radiation. We weren't sure. And so I started on chemo. I got my port put in right before Christmas Eve. Maybe it was a little sooner because my hair started falling out Christmas Day, December 2018.
Wow. Great Christmas.
Yeah. Day, well, huh? I didn't tell anybody because I couldn't. I was too upset about it. So I put it up in a bun and kept moving on.
That's probably a good mother call too, you know, let Christmas roll.
Let's move on. Right. Yeah. But so we started on chemo, and chemo was pretty standard, until I got to the second round of drugs, was called Taxol. It just started having side effects where I would lose, feeling in my toes and my fingers. And so we cut that short, and I thought, okay, that's fine. I'm ready to be done anyways. And went on to surgery. The doctor had recommended I do just the mastectomy on the one side before radiation so that it wouldn't affect both breasts after radiation. So we did that and put like a spacer implant in just until we figured out what my next step was. That's kind of when things started to go wrong for me. So I, about 2 weeks after my first surgery, I ended up with a pretty bad infection. And so they had to remove the implant that they had put in and were not able to put anything else in at the moment. And so I woke up feeling pretty mutilated. Body was deformed, terrible looking, had no breasts
just
on one
violent,
side.
Just a violent, brutal thing to your body.
Yeah, it was awful. And I was so sick after that too, just had no energy. I really felt like that was probably one of the lowest points, was just like you think you're going in one direction and then everything just really changed. I was without one breast for about 8 months while we went through the rest of the treatment. So then right after that surgery, we went back into chemo, finished that up, and then did radiation. And they were concerned with radiation because I didn't have that breast to keep the skin. When you do radiation, the skin really tightens. And it's like when you get sunburn and your skin kind of draws in that moisture and it just becomes very, you know, tight. And so they were concerned that, you know, it's going to affect whatever the outcome, the forever outcome is. And so that was hard and knowing that. And then, yeah, and then we did the big surgery, which the big surgery after radiation was, some people can opt for implants. At our point, at our you know, after the reaction that I had, implants was not an option. And so we did a full reconstruction with skin from my own body and fat tissue from my own body. And that was how many hours of surgery? 10 to 12 hours. Yeah. It was a really long, long day. That was the hardest surgery to recover from. My whole body was done and tired. And
you almost went septic from the first implant surgery. Fortunately, she was still in the hospital. They were able to kind of identify what was happening soon enough. But I mean, it was almost really a bad situation.
And when we talk about recovery, was there a lot of season when you're just laying in bed in your house and not able to do a dang thing for anybody and you're just there?
Mm-hmm. Not only from the recovery of surgery, but during chemo. I mean, after the few days after chemo, I very rarely got out of bed. It was hard. It was like the Taxol, I mean, he had to carry me just to the bathroom because my whole body, it affects the bones and the joints in your body. And that's one of the other reasons why we slowed it down and then stopped for a little while with that medication is because I could barely get up and move a couple of days after. So that process of, you know, chemo and recovery and then surgery and recovery and then, oh, another surgery because I got this, you know, sick from it and the recovery on that. It was like very long and very slow and discouraging to just feel like, am I ever going to get well? Is this ever going to be better?
Were you ever struggling with anger towards God?
I don't think I did. I don't think that was one of the things that I went through. With Greg's mom, you know, we were told originally she might live probably about 5 years, and I think she lived six. With Jenny, the doctor was always, we're going to get through this. She even said what your mom had today, we could do better with. The information and the things we've learned has just gone, you know, we've learned so much that it's not like it was for her. Because I think she knew we all had that fear, but that was really reassuring that, okay, we've got a journey we're on. You know, I wish we didn't have to go on it, but I think God's going to walk every step with us. And we actually did have a pastor give Greg and I a word that said, think of your daughter's thing as a train track. But he said, hers is going to be like this. It's not going to be a straight track. And that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, you know, because people that aren't in your family, but hearing all the news updates, it felt like that from an, you know.
It was just like anything that could go wrong, it felt like was going wrong there for a while.
Yeah, and I mean, I think even just her talking about it and the whole process, she was a warrior through the whole thing. I mean, the way she carried herself, you know, she didn't stop working. She didn't, you always hear that, you know, about the whole battle with cancer. And she just, even the way she had, her outlook was incredible. You know, God wasn't, I think, choosing to heal her the way that God, you would think that God would heal somebody, you know, through a miracle, but he did so much more miraculous through her willingness to go through what she needed to. And even to that point, I just remember that day we chose to shave her head. We obviously didn't want to have to go through the process of watching all her hair just slowly falling away. We were shaving her head and, you know, and I just remember that was a far more emotional than I thought it would have been. You know, it was kind of like a fun.
For you?
Well, yeah,
for her or
both of us.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was going to be, you know, we're going to shave each other's heads and here we go. We're going through this thing. And no, it was a moment of breakdown for both of us. And there were so many days that went by. She would carry herself in public with such an incredible heart and just willing to go through whatever cancer threw at her. But there were times when we were at home and the look in her face during those darkest moments was, you know, just a look of despair, almost like looking into the eyes of somebody that knows there's a doom and a gloom ahead and you don't really know where it's going to go. I just remember thinking, I don't know how to help you. I don't know how to carry you through this. You are in the bottom of the barrel, and I can't get you out of that.
My thoughts are just in a million directions when I prepare for stuff like this, and how you said she was alone, but then you immediately corrected yourself. But there's an aloneness and a togetherness. Like, there's a part of what she's going through that she's truly can not have anybody else go through it with her. Yep. Like, there's a part of it where, you know, you certainly are alone. Was this affecting your mental health with depression or anxiety? Did you already have any of those struggles heading into this?
Yeah, really, no. Had not had any of these struggles. But it is really hard to sit in bed for that long and not start to think the thoughts of sadness. And I don't think I ever thought, you know, of self-harm or anything, but just that, like, I hate that my family has to walk through this.
Yes, you did.
Well, I thought I would rather die than have to go through all of this. Sure. Yeah, it was painful. It was difficult. It was hard.
So you had the thoughts, but not necessarily the contemplation.
Right, exactly. And there was no getting around it except to go through it. But there were days when I would pull myself up from my boots. You know, I was looking back on my memories of it. And I remember this was I can't show the audience this, but on my Instagram, a picture of me, and I've, you know, had my head shaved and kind of felt like a warrior at that time, and just said, you know, cancer, you can take my hair, you can have my breast, you can take flesh and bone, but you will not steal my heart, my strength, my joy. Those come from the Lord. You know, his mercies are new every day. And today I'm in the army of the living God, and I have things to do. Get behind me, Satan. There were days where I just had to pull myself together, get out of bed, put stuff on my face and clothes on my body, and say, like, I'm not going to allow myself to sit in this pity, because I've got things to do. I've got a life to live. So, but it was hard to get there some days.
What would be your most naturally leaning alternative to strength in God? Was it distraction, self-pity? For some people, it'd be substance abuse. Like, what if something was going to get you, yeah, what would it have been?
I think self-pity. Ben and I have been through a lot in our marriage. We struggled to have kids. He lost his dad early on in our marriage. So it was like, seriously, why me? Or like, why does this always happen to our family? Or, you know, that kind of thing. So I think self-pity is definitely the thing that I go to the most.
I remember, Jenny, reading one of your posts, and I just, because of a lot of the theological stuff that I was thinking and rethinking, it just felt so healthy for people to read. And I don't remember what it was word for word, but it had something to do with, I guess what I would say in my words, you had faith in what God was capable of, and you had faith in God's presence with you, but you didn't have a certain outcome that you had put on God to deliver for you. And I think you communicated that really clearly. Was that something that you learned in the process of, God, I follow you no matter what? I was raised on theology where we took a lot of stuff out of context from the Bible, and then we were just like, God has to do this. And then our faith is shipwrecked when it doesn't pan out how we thought it would.
I think it was definitely something I learned in the process. I remember it was our all staff Christmas party the year that I was diagnosed, so December 2018. I remember everyone's in there kind of chipper and happy, and I'm just really not, and not really wanting to go and not feeling it. And I remember going to the bathroom, having a pity party, and saying, like, God, I don't want to do this. I don't want to sing hymns and be all happy, and this just doesn't feel good. And I just remember him kindly, but also sternly saying, like, this whole thing is not about you. I get that you don't want to do this, but there's a greater cause here. There's a greater reason, and you're just going to have to trust me. That really didn't sit well with me for
some
a while.
Some stern words.
and then I kind of came to the terms with, like, that's kind of how Jesus felt when he was going to the cross. He was like, God, please take this cup from me. Like, please, begging God to take it from him. And, but then he came to terms with, not my will, but yours be done. And I really felt like that was kind of my mantra. Lord, you can take this cup from me. You're able to do that. But, like, I'm going to trust that your will is bigger than mine, and I'm just going to take one day at a time.
I think that helped us not be angry, because she came to terms with it, that God's not going to do a miraculous on the spot healing. This is something I'm going to get healing at the end, but it's going to be through medical. And so because she came to a peace with it, it helped everyone come to that. You know, it would have been easy to say because we were having, you know, miracles happening in the church, and it would have been easy to get angry at that point when it didn't happen for her. But
right.
I mean, I don't think outwardly she had come to terms with it. Inwardly, I'm sure she still struggled every day, but her posts, all that, I think helped all of us to realize, okay, this is God's plan right now for whatever reason.
People were getting healed to from what I understand, from a healing service that this cancer initiated in the first place. Am I correct that Josh, our lead pastor, your brother, was like, we're going to pray for my sister regardless. Let's just invite everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think our family was pretty desperate at that point to say, like, what do we need to do to get this gone? Like, we're gonna find somebody to come and pray. And he had heard about these guys from Micah who had gotten prayer and healing from him. And so, yeah, he came and we sat in Josh's living room and he prayed over me and then came and prayed over the church. And I definitely feel like maybe had we not been in such a crisis mode for our own family, that maybe we wouldn't have been as desperate for a healing touch. And so God used it. And so I'm thankful for that.
During the process, though, when you see legit miraculous healings, was there ever a time when, I mean, because I don't know what it was like to walk in your shoes. Did you ever get your hopes up? Like, oh my gosh, this is really happening. I'm next in line.
Yeah, I mean, I was hopeful and I wanted it, but I also, in the back of my mind, you know, God said that to that, that this is not about you well before that service ever started. And in the back of my mind, I just had a feeling I was meant to walk through this, and not because he's not good to me and not because he doesn't love me, but because there's probably somebody that he needs me to help.
Wow.
And
that's such, I mean, you saying that, and as like a fellow brother in Christ, like that is a God-ordained change in your heart that you were at a healing service, but your expectations were whatever God says. That's huge.
Well, and I wasn't at the healing service, I have to say. So I had chemo on Wednesday. It was the first Wednesday, and I was at home sick in bed. So he came and prayed over me, or I went to Josh's house before, but I was not there. But I remember having it on my phone, and I had fallen asleep at some point in the middle of the night. I woke up, and it was still going on, and I was like, what is happening?
Am I dreaming?
I was so confused.
Am I with, like, the Lord?
Are they still there? And I think I remember texting somebody like, are y'all still at the church? But so yeah, I was not there, but I still, I mean, obviously heard the stories, and it was absolutely amazing. But because I was in chemo, they didn't want me to be around so many people, and I was just really sick that day. So
was your spiritual resolve parallel to hers in any way, or completely different path as far as how you were reflecting on God and your current life circumstances?
Beyond the aspect, like you said earlier, of, okay, God, we know who you are. You're supposed to heal all bad things, you know, to the point of, we're going through some really big struggles and we need you, God, and you're not showing up in her life. Number one, we need to press harder. And number two, even though you're not clearly doing a instantaneous miracle in her life, we're still going to trust you even more. And so that, I think, was really interesting to kind of go through. And her faith definitely carried all of us. And it was really cool to see the church. I mean, people were mowing our grass for us. I mean, it was, they did everything for providing food. And it was definitely a tough season where we just needed to kind of lean on your strength in that time to move forward.
She led us through that. I have to get through this to get to the other side, all of that. She led us positive.
Yeah, because if y'all would have brought the wallering, it would have been counterproductive to her.
Right. So she led us through it with her attitude and her determination and her spirit.
Might sound pretty trite, but I mean this in the deepest of ways. Like, how are you forever changed having gone through this?
It's given me a greater empathy for people who suffer. Those that suffer with physical things that maybe I didn't understand before, nausea. And I remember having lunch with my friend Jess, who had just gone through breast cancer. Hers is not the same. And I remember just kind of crying and apologizing to her and saying, like, I hate to say this, but I feel like you going through breast cancer was for me. And I'm sorry for that, because I feel like I need you right now. And I feel like that has been the case for a lot of women since, is that I not that I have anything to offer, but because I've been through a similar journey, I can relate and be a shoulder and someone to ask questions. And so, I'm thankful that there's purpose in that and that I can share my story with whoever needs to know and whoever it will help, even if it's just a little bit, just to say like, yeah, I've been there, you know, and I can understand what you're going through. So, I think that's where it's changed me. I think realizing that our pain is not in vain, that God is going to use every little bit to accomplish his purposes. So
a few random questions that I just kind of like, where do these belong? I'll just throw them in there at the end. How would you have wanted God to be talked about to your kids if you would have died? Ben, we see where this is headed. Age appropriate. Here's what I want you to tell the kids.
Well, Ben is just a much better parent than I am. So it's better if I go than him. So that was a little bit relieving to know, like, they were in good hands. They were in really good hands.
If he would have died, you would have been like, get used to bad things happening, exactly. Children.
I'll be in my room forever. So no, he'd have done well. He's just such a good leader and of our family and our kids spiritually. And so I think I would just want them to know that God is faithful. Even when it feels like he didn't come through, he's faithful. And one thing he kept reminding me is that he is a good father who gives good gifts to his children. And this was not a gift that he gave me. This is not something he gave to me or wanted me to go through. But because it happened, he allowed good things to come of it. And so, you know, I would never want my children, because of something I went through, to lose faith.
We made a commitment to talk to our kids and tell our kids, you know, the truth, you know, about every situation we were going through. Maybe we weren't giving them all the details, but for us, it just felt like it was necessary. It just seemed like that was the only way for us to, you know, really go through this together.
And still feels like a good decision having to do it over
again. I do. And I think that it, you know, better coming from us than kids finding out from someone else. And so part of the reason behind that decision was, you know, we knew that kids were going to be asking and their parents would be talking about it. And the last thing we wanted to do is break some sort of a trust. The thought of losing her, that was not a thought. We were just trying to go through the whatever was coming next. You know, that was the one thing we were probably trying to keep completely out of our minds, just to help support as much as possible, and knew that that would probably not help the situation. We didn't know how to talk about it with the kids other than, here's what mommy's going through. Mommy's hopefully going to be okay. These are things she's going to experience. The doctor here, we would regurgitate everything the doctor was saying. Honestly, that was probably one of the best things, was she knew how to talk to us. And even though it felt like maybe sometimes she was sugarcoating, it allowed us to figure out how to sugarcoat it with our kids too. And it really wasn't sugarcoating. It was sympathizing and trying to empathize in that situation. And so we didn't need to make this anything more or less than what it was. And, you know, we just needed to be able to surround her and kind of be there for her. And I know you asked a question earlier about, you know, some of the side effects and the depression side of it. And I think that's probably been the hardest thing. Cancer isn't one of those things, I feel like, where you, at least with what she had, she's still on medication that is preventing her cancer feeds on a lot of the hormone production that her body creates. And so she's got to take medication that stops that production. Otherwise it could grow. The things that I think that has caused the side effects, you kind of try to brace yourself because they talk about it to a certain extent, but you don't know the depression. You don't know you know, I just know that she goes through these moments where I'm like, are you not on your medication anymore? Like, what's going on? Or she is nauseous or has these days. And I'm like, hey, you know, where is this coming from? And usually it's because of the medication that she's on. And so it's still something where I think we'll probably have to deal with battle for the rest of our lives.
It's not a thing of the past.
It's not. Yeah. And I mean, there's still those days.
Yeah, I bet you it's maybe surprising for people to hear. Oh, so it's not totally over. It's something that you guys have to.
I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but I mean, how often do you feel like you question another scare? You know, is this coming back? Am I going to have to go through this again? Like, how often is that?
The first 5 years are pretty telling. I mean, I have had multiple biopsies since, and multiple, you know, I've had MRIs and things because we talked about in the beginning, there's this like fear and worry that it will happen. I feel like it's become less and less as I've kind of moved further beyond it. But I think I realized that it can happen to me. I never really thought this kind of thing could happen to me. And so when it does, then you're very much more aware of your body and what that it can fail you big time. And so, yeah.
If you were to enter a season where this nightmare seemed to be coming back, I mean, you know yourself and kind of where you're at outside of a miracle, would you resort to what in the, what this is like, would you be angry?
I think so. I don't think I could not be angry, but also I'm aware of my mortality. You know, we're all destined to the same destiny, which is to die. And so like, we're going to go out one way or the other. If this is my way, then it's my way. But would I be angry? I'm sure I would be.
If someone's listening right now and they are in a similar rock bottom that you actually can relate to, what would you say?
Yeah. Take one day at a time. I don't know.
I mean, honestly, that's a big one. Seriously. Like that to me is miracle working power. If you can take one day.
Yeah. You feel like you're on a roller coaster when you get a diagnosis like this and things just start moving very fast and you kind of lose a little bit of a sense of what your reality looked like before and everything just kind of spins a little bit and, you know, stopping and taking one day and making the choice for that day and not thinking about every choice that you have to make in the near future because there are a lot of decisions and things that have to be made and do your own research, really know your body, talk with your spouse, talk with your loved ones, make sure that you're making decisions that are right for you. It's not a one size fits all. Everybody that I've talked to has had a slightly different road that they've taken. And I would say for the most part with mine at the end with the hormone treatments, I have had to take that one day at a time. I have had to really adjust medicines. I have gone through multiple different types of medicines because I am determined that I am not going to be miserable. And this is the quality of life issue for me. And so I'm going to be patient in finding what works and pushing back on my doctors when it's not working. You know, I kind of get a smirk on my face when I see my oncologist because he knows that I'm difficult and we kind of have banter about that. But like, I'm very determined to be okay for my family. And so that has been a process. And so I feel great. I feel like I'm on the best regimen I could be on for my body, but it's not for everybody.
And when you say determined to be okay, like determined to survive anything cancer related, or are you talking more of like a mental
ascent? Yeah. I'm determined to be able to live in a place now, that is healthy, for my mental. Ben was saying with the medications that I'm on, it can cause some very severe mental side effects. And so having to find that balance of how to live within that, but also trusting that this is what I'm supposed to be on and should be on to help to prevent cancer from forming in the future. It's been just a delicate balance of working with the doctors and figuring out. But yeah, I'm determined to be healthy mentally. And so that's what I've been working toward. So
sweet.
This is Roz Page. I've been a part of Seacoast for 27 years and on staff for 25 years. In the fall of 2020, I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. After a double mastectomy in March 2021, I was declared cancer-free. However, since it was stage 3, my doctors highly recommended I do preventative treatment with chemo. I had 4 chemo treatments over 3 months during the summer, followed by 28 days of radiation. I'm taking a hormone blocker and getting regular checkups over the course of 5 years. I am so blessed to have my family and friends standing with me and praying for me through that valley. I realized that I was up against far more than I could handle, and I cherished everyone for their prayers and support and encouragement as they truly brighten my days. God taught me throughout this whole battle what the most important things are in life. Those lessons taught me never to hesitate to love on and encourage others through their own valleys, even if you barely know them. It was the hardest thing I ever had to go through. But in my weakness, I became stronger in my relationship with the Lord and others. And I'm thankful for my experiences last year. To this day, I still review last year's journal, and I'm reminded how precious that time was in spite of the pain and suffering my body was going through. Women, please get checked regularly. If your body has cancer in it, then your body needs help to get rid of it. And the sooner you give your body what it needs to fight cancer, the sooner you will be cancer-free.
Thanks for listening. There's a link in the show notes to our podcast Facebook page where we talk about these episodes and share some behind-the-scenes information, including guests we're booking. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.